Hello, everyone, and welcome to Crush Course, the podcast for the wine curious. I'm your host, Sarah, coming to you from Sonoma Valley, California. This week, in the spirit of Thanksgiving, I thought we could give thanks for one of the secret weapons of the wine industry, interns. While no two individuals' journeys in the wine industry are the same, a good majority of young winemakers go through the internship process before acquiring a full-time job. It's a wonderful opportunity to learn about different winemaking styles and travel the world, but it's still no walk in the park. So, let's get to it, shall we? My first internship was in the summer of 2016. I worked in a vineyard in the Delta region, which is a viticultural area just south of Sacramento. The hours were long, 10 hours a day, 5 days a week, plus a half day on Saturdays, and I came home every day exhausted, covered in sweat and dust. I had just about enough energy to take a shower and make myself a quick dinner before passing out on my bed. And the next day, it started all over again. It was physically and mentally exhausting, but so fulfilling. It was the first time I was able to apply what I had learned in university in the real world, identifying nutrient deficiencies and pest infestations, estimating the year's crop load, and monitoring sugar levels in the grapes as the season progressed. I witnessed the 2016 crop being harvested and sent off to be made into that year's vintage. Over the course of the next 2 years, I would do another 3 internships, progressing through the cellar and the lab, and even getting to spend a season in Australia. The years I spent as an intern were stressful and challenging, but with each harvest finished and on my resume, I felt so accomplished, and I found that I couldn't wait to do it again. Most wineries will employ interns or seasonal temps during the harvest season to help manage the sheer increase in workload. The word intern is almost exclusive to the United States. In other countries, these roles are titled harvest casual, harvest cellar hand or enologist, or simply harvest temp. During the off-season, December through July, it's possible for the full-time team to handle the work, barreling, blending, and bottling the wine to make room before the next season. But during harvest, there is beyond too much work for the crew to handle on their own. So we bring in the interns. These could be students of viticulture and enology, wine educators who want to go behind the scenes for a season, or folks who are just curious and willing to work hard. So if you think about it, the wine industry could not survive without interns. There simply wouldn't be enough hands to get all of the work done. For most young people entering the wine industry, an internship is the first step. Interns will typically start a few weeks prior to the anticipated start of harvest. This way, the seasonal workers have had plenty of time to be trained, both on procedures and important safety measures, and to prepare the cellar. This is tough work. I literally trained in the gym for months leading up to my first cellar internship to make sure that I had the strength and stamina to not injure myself in my work. This was my dad's idea, and at first I thought it was a bit of overkill, but as soon as I started work and I felt how tired and sore my body was, I knew that it had been a smart move. Lifting buckets of chemicals and additives, climbing catwalks and ladders with said buckets, hauling machinery, and moving barrels. Cellar work is a major workout in itself. Winery CrossFit, if you will. In the first month, I had chemical burns, bruises all up and down my legs, and definition in muscles I didn't even know existed. It was tough. Work starts early in a winery, usually 6 or 7 in the morning, sometimes as early as 3 a.m. depending on the work. Some days you will be running around, trying to do a million different things, all while dodging pressure washers and forklifts. Other days, you may be stuck sanitizing tank after tank for 8 hours straight. Many days, you come home exhausted, soaking wet in a combination of water, chemicals, and wine. Clothes in the cellar aren't meant to be fashionable, but comfortable and sturdy enough to withstand the physical abuse they will endure as you shovel out tanks or whisk up a yeast culture. It's always a good idea to keep an extra set of clothes in your car, especially socks. You will come home with stains and holes in your jeans, and your boots will almost never feel properly dry. During harvest, there are a lot of things that you can't just press pause and come back to the next day, whether it's sorting and receiving fruit, pump overs, dig outs, or moving wine from one tank to another. There's work that needs to be done, and the crew cannot go home until it is all taken care of. This means sometimes working upwards of 12 hours a day, without any consistent days off. At most, you may have one day off a week to wash, cook, and recuperate before the next week starts. Despite how physically and mentally demanding these internships are, it is by far one of the best experiences one can have in the wine industry. There is nothing quite like the sense of family and camaraderie that comes with working with a team of equally passionate individuals towards the goal of making this one of the best vintages yet. You bond over long hours and 1,000 cups of coffee, breakfast burritos, post-work beers, near misses, great successes, and finally reaching the end in one tired but fulfilled piece. Not to say that there won't be clashes of personality. Wine is one of those industries that attracts people with a certain type of ego. These are almost always in a position of authority, either a winemaker or a cellar master, and they seem to delight in making things difficult for the newcomers. Everyone I know in the wine industry has known at least one person like this during their early career. It's sort of the honorary Goliath that you have to best to prove yourself worthy. Maybe they know that this industry isn't easy, and they want to provide a key learning opportunity to make sure you know what you're in for. But sometimes it's just them asserting their dominance and authority because they can. Dealing with these sorts of people really is an exercise in patience and optimism. Outside of work, interns come together via Facebook groups and friends of friends. Before the 6-day work week kicks in, they explore their temporary home and take the opportunity to bond with the other like-minded wine folk. Evenings after work are spent attending wine tasting groups, trying out new local fare, and putting in work on their garage winemaking projects. When they have a full day off, they will spend it trying as many new wineries as they can, or perhaps they will venture to a nearby town or city that they otherwise would never have the chance to visit. I have met people from France, Australia, Argentina, Germany, New Zealand, South Africa, China, Greece, Hungary, Croatia, and many more countries as part of wine internships. Wine is an international art, after all. These young winos will often chase the harvest, or hemisphere hop, for years at a time. Just as the harvest season is wrapping up in the northern hemisphere, it will be just getting ready to start in the south. Some individuals will spend years going back and forth between the wine regions on opposite sides of the globe. It's quite a way to live. It takes a lot of grit and perseverance and unwavering determination, and probably a good storage unit. If you are listening to this and going, gee, that sounds amazing, keep in mind the financial impact of this nomadic lifestyle. While you do have the opportunity to live and work in some of the most beautiful wine regions in the world, it does come with a hefty price tag. Plane tickets, accommodation, necessities will quickly add up. After harvest is over and the plane ticket to the next stop is purchased, there's rarely any profit. But so long as you are willing to pack light and live lean, this is a lifestyle that works well for some people. Wine internships aren't easy. No matter what I Love Lucy would have you think, it's not all stomping grapes. Although at some wineries, that will be part of the itinerary. But as difficult as these internships can be, it's arguably the best way to get into the industry. You get your hands dirty, and you learn by doing how wine is made. And it can provide the chance to travel and meet all sorts of people. My years spent as an intern were some of the best of my life, despite the calluses. If you're entering the wine industry on the production side, I cannot emphasize enough the importance of internships. It's a chance to figure out your own values. What size winery do you prefer? What kind of team? What kind of roles? And what kind of winemaking? The more you know, the better you can figure out what suits you. And that knowledge is irreplaceable in navigating the full-time job market. Now, Sarah, you've been rambling on about internships for a while here. What's the point? I guess what I'm trying to say here is that there are a lot of elements behind the scenes in winemaking that we take for granted. Many people out there seem to imagine winemaking as a glamorous, effortless process, but it's a lot of hard work, and sleepless nights, and mental strife. It takes a whole village, sometimes a very large village, to get everything done in a season so that the winery may release that vintage and make it through to the next year. And part of that village are the traveling interns that lend a hand each harvest. So thank you to all the interns out there. This industry would not survive without you. And as this harvest wraps up, we here at Crush Course wish you the best of luck and many happy memories in whatever adventure awaits you. Speaking of gratitude, Thanksgiving is next week. It's arguably the biggest foodie holiday of the year, so we have to make sure we have the right wines to make the most out of Turkey Day. If you are feeling a bit stumped about what bottle to bring, I am here with a few suggestions. So without further ado, here is my Thanksgiving wine list. I always start with sparkling wine. Thanksgiving for us is an all-day affair. Cooking can start as early as 10 in the morning, and while everything is getting ready, we play games, we watch a football game or two, and just enjoy each other's company. We don't start drinking that early, but by the mid-afternoon, with all the aromas flooding the house, it's a good time to pop some bubbly. Look for a non-vintage champagne, cava, or California sparkling. I usually try to go for something a bit more tart and more acid-driven to sort of preemptively balance out the richness of the meal to come. For whites, I always keep a standard Chardonnay in the fridge. Chardonnay is an undeniable crowd pleaser, and since it's a familiar name, folks won't be too scared to pour themselves a glass. However, I would advise against a butter bomb. There will be plenty of butter in the potatoes. Instead, look for a Chablis. This Chardonnay will be coming from France and will typically be less oaky, more apple and lemon zest. The other white wine I like to stock up on is an aromatic white, like Gewürztraminer, Riesling, or Viognier. These will be a whiff of fresh air, or fresh aroma, amongst all the smells of Thanksgiving dinner. Lychee, fresh florals, and bright acidity will be a good contrast on the palate. I like to keep a few options on hand for reds as well, since you never know what people will be in the mood for. Lighter reds like Gamay or Grenache are a great idea. You can still do red wine with white meat, so long as it's not too heavy or tannic. I am personally a huge fan of Beaujolais from France, or Grenache, aka Garnacha, from Spain. These will also lend some interesting, herbaceous, earthy notes that will pair well with roasted vegetables and bread stuffing. While I'm not a fan of drinking Cabernet at Thanksgiving dinner, there will always be a few diners who will insist on a glass, so best to have a bottle on standby. There are different levels of heaviness when it comes to Cabernet Sauvignon, based on the tannin level and oak treatment. Personally, I would opt for a Cabernet with a bit more acid and more neutral oak, so that while it's the richer red on the table, it still shows plenty of fruit. That way, you can have a glass after dinner while you slowly sink into your food coma, without it stripping your palate and erasing all those delicious flavors from dinner. A good example of this kind of Cabernet I'm talking about is the Heights Napa Valley Cabernet Sauvignon. At $60 a bottle, it's a good Cabernet to keep on hand for special occasions. It's a crowd pleaser and gives the same, if not better, quality than some cabs out there that go for $100 or more. That's it for this week. We will be taking a break next week for the Thanksgiving holiday. We will be back on Friday, December 3rd. I'm really looking forward to some of our topics for December. mulled wine, ice wine, and fortified wines. Can you see a theme here? We'll also be talking about some of the cool new gadgets out there that you may just want to get for the wine lover in your life. Because let's be honest, they don't need another bedazzled wine stopper. I'm Sarah, and this has been your Crush Course on Wine Internships. I wish you all a wonderful Thanksgiving, full of good wine, good food, and good times. Until next time, cheers!